There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
Alan Shipnuck, his book on Phil Mickelson, Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar, joins us right now on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. Alan, thanks for coming on. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the initial reaction. The book is making the rounds, and from what I understand, the reviews have been great. Not good, great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been fun. You know, it was a long build-up to actually releasing the book because, you know, we dropped an excerpt back in February that kind of set Phil's world on fire. And so I'm just happy that people can read the book in its totality and see that it really is a fair, balanced look at a really complicated person. And the reviews have been great. The feedback from people on social, it's been really fun because, you know, my goal is always to write just a lively, you know, kind of engaging anecdotal tale about an incredible life. I mean, Phil he's a larger than life character. So it's all in the book, the good, the bad, the controversial, you know, all his virtues are in there as well. So it's been fun to get the feedback for sure.
Alan, let's go through a couple of things quickly. Was the goal of the book to write something where at the end of it, you let the reader decide as opposed to you standing up like an attorney trying to win a case?
Yeah, definitely the former. I'm not here to legislate anyone's feelings about Phil. Like, and the book was written with a lot of affection. I've enjoyed writing about Phil through the years. My first year covering the tour was 1994. That was his second full season. So I've tracked him the entirety of his career, basically. And it's been a blast. I mean, every time he's ever been on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I wrote that story. So I've been on the ground for all his greatest victories and all the slapstick defeats. And I've had a lot of access to Phil and the people around him through the years. So I just wanted to bring all that to the book. And he's a very contradictory personality. I mean, there are these multitudes that live within Phil Mickelson, and he can be incredibly charming and giving and funny, and he can be petty and vindictive and scheming. And everything you've ever heard about Phil Mickelson is probably true. Like there's so many different sides to him. And so I just wanted to lay that all out in the book and let people take from it what they will. And it's been interesting and I guess gratifying that a lot of folks who have now have read the book said, I don't know how to feel about Phil. Some of it made me want to hug him. Some wanted me made me roll my eyes. Some made me outraged. Some made me laugh. Like, he is a really contradictory person. And so, to answer your question, it's all in the book, and people will feel about Phil the way they want to. And I'm not here to tell them what, you know, whether he's good or bad or otherwise. He just is, and the reader can decide.
Did you have enough of a relationship where this could have been, perhaps, or was there ever a discussion to make it an authorized biography, where you guys would actually sit down and do this as an authorized biography?
I mean, I went to Phil three times face-to-face and asked him to do interviews for this book, going back to the 2020 PGA Championship. And, you know, he thought about it and he ultimately declined, which is his prerogative, and that was fine because, like I said, I've had so much access to him through the years. I did explain to Phil I thought it was in his best interest to give his spin on everything and tell his side of every story, but he elected not to do that. And so then I just worked on the book all through 2021. It was due December 1st, and right around Thanksgiving, that's when Phil called me, and we had that phone call that sort of rocked both of our worlds. But in the final analysis, he couldn't help himself. Like, he didn't want to talk to me. He decided not to talk to me. He turned me down over and over, but he couldn't just hold back, because it's been said many times about Phil, he needs to be the smartest guy in the room. And he just had to tell me that he had gamed the system, and he was, you know, in his negotiations with the Saudis, and he was smarter than Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, and he was smarter than Greg Norman, who was the front man for the Saudis, and he was playing both sides against each other, and he's creating all this leverage, and he's getting all these things he'd always want from a business standpoint in professional golf. And so it's revealing about who Phil really is. And so, it was, you know, we had that one interview. But through the years, I've done a 90-minute podcast with Phil. I've interviewed him many times. So his voice is always going to be in the story no matter what.
Alan Shipnuck is with us. His book on Phil Mickelson came out on May the 17th. He's with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. In a nutshell, I think he can't help himself. That best describes Phil Mickelson. If you were to use any phrase, that would be the one, would it not?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you see it in the way he plays the game. You know, he will take on shots that have a very low probability of succeeding, but he needs that energy. That's what inspires him. And when he does pull it off, he's a folk hero, like when he was in the trees at Amen Corner, the 2010 Masters. But it's also cost him plenty of tournaments, too. I mean, he's a double-down kind of personality. You see it on the golf course, you see it in the casino, and you see it even in, you know, his dealings with the media. It's part of what just makes Phil so interesting, because he puts it out there and he goes for it.
We'll talk about money in a second, but is he now the 50-plus-year-old frat boy who can't help himself because he has to live up to being what he made himself into in that regard?
And by the way, you do talk about his college years in the book, and yes, he was the same way in college, albeit without the money, right?
Yeah. I mean, all the college stuff is so funny to me. I love that chapter. But even then, because there's a story where Gary McCord, you know, before he became announcer, he was an unsuccessful tour player, and he goes out for this practice round ahead of the Tucson Open, and this tall, gangly kid comes up to him. It's Phil, who's in college, and McCord knew his name, but they never met before. And McCord's right-handed, Phil's lefty, of course. And Phil says, "Oh, I've been out here all day. It's getting dark. Let's play the last three holes for fun. You use my clubs, and I'll use your clubs, and we'll play $100 a hole." And McCord says to me, "I should have known then it was a bad bet, because what college kid can afford $100 a hole?" But he takes the bet. Phil wins the 16th hole, wins the 17th, wins the 18th, takes McCord for $300, and shakes his hand and takes off. And, of course, Phil's actually naturally right-handed in everything but golf, so it was not really a fair bet. And but, yeah, so Phil's always had that edge and that need. He's an adrenaline junkie. Like, that's just the way he lives his life.
But the problem is, if you keep pushing it, you're going to get busted. And it really feels, and we'll talk about the money and the $40 million and all these other things. Did he go too far because he couldn't help himself? And how much trouble do you think he continues to be in? Not if he even just cleans up his act now. How much trouble is he in going forward?
Yeah, I mean, Phil's always been open about his gambling. I mean, he used to call into the Dan Patrick Show and give NFL picks. And when, you know, he bet the Ravens 28-1 back in, you know, 2002 when they won the Super Bowl, and put down $20,000 and cashed over $500,000 ticket. He loved to crow about that. But anyone who knows a heavy-duty gambler knows that the house always wins, right? I mean, there's always going to be more losses than wins, or so it seems. And so And all this action, this need for action, brought, you know, Phil into the orbit of, you know, some really shady characters. And, you know, there was this dude who got busted in San Diego for money laundering and wire fraud. And in all of the investigation, it came out, you know, ESPN Outside the Lines reported that Phil had wired this guy $2.75 million for gambling losses. And that's a big number. All the stuff with Billy Walters that Phil got mixed up in, you know, in the court testimony and other documents, it was clear that Phil owed Billy millions of dollars. So it's always been out there, but no one could ever really knew the true scale of it. But, you know, in my reporting for the book, what I discovered was that as part of this insider trading case, you know, Phil was subject to this forensic audit of his finances. And what the documents showed was that in the 4 years that were scrutinized, 2010 to 14, you know, he claimed $40 million in gambling losses. That's a big number. You know, we don't know everything about Phil's money troubles or not, but that suggests that it could run really deep. And then there's other stuff in the book that nobody knows about, you know, like Phil's bust up with Bones, his career-long caddy. A lot of that was over money. You know, over time, Phil owed his caddy almost $1 million, and he wouldn't make him whole. And that was obviously a huge source of tension. And even the Billy Walters stuff, you know, Phil sold these stocks that Walters had suggested to him, and that was to pay off this gambling debt to Billy Walters. Like, given that Phil's number two all time on the money list and all these made endorsements, like, why wouldn't he just wire Billy Walters the money? Why wouldn't he just cut a check to Bones? You know, Phil recently sold his Gulfstream, and people were shocked about that because it was called Air Phil, and it was like his fourth child. And so we don't know everything, but you start piecing all these pieces together, and, you know, it suggests there might be some serious financial pressure there. And which brings us to the current moment, you know, with him getting mixed up with Saudi Arabia. And we know that the Saudis are bad actors on the world stage. I mean, 15 of the 9/11 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia just, you know, they assassinated a Washington Post reporter who's a resident of the United States, you know, Jamal Khashoggi. And so why would you ever get in bed with people like that? Well, if you need the money, if there's a desperation there, then maybe you would. So, I mean, it's been one of the fundamental questions. Why is Phil chasing the Saudi money so hard? So to your question, it's like there's some reason to believe that there's more necessity there than we ever could have imagined, given how much he's made throughout his life.
Yeah, we talk about the need for money. Do you think for that reason he'll still go over to London and golf in the LIV deal?
Yeah, I mean, Phil's at a huge crossroads personally and professionally. Because there is a way back for him. You know, Jack Nicklaus recently said, you know, about Phil, you know, we are a forgiving nation. And it's true. I mean, sports fans love a comeback. They love a redemption story. And Tiger Woods has put the game and his family and the fans through much worse than Phil ever has through his scandals. And Tiger's never been more beloved. So, of course, people are ready to cheer for Phil again. But if he takes the Saudi money, knowing what we know about how he really feels about them and having acknowledged their atrocities, if he takes that money and turns his back on the PGA Tour, I think it's gonna be hard for fans to cheer for him again, because then he just looks like a mercenary who's, you know, kind of morally bankrupt. And so
Alan, you can't go to that tour and keep endorsements, keep people on your hat and your bag and your shirt and all those things. So am I correct in assuming 1 minute over there and all of that stuff is gone?
Yeah, is he that desperate, though? That's the question.
No, but I'm saying it's harder to come back once people start dropping you.
Absolutely.
And pointing out publicly what your problems are.
Right, so like Lee Westwood, who's always been a UPS endorser and who's clearly going to play the Saudi events, he just got dropped by UPS. So you're right. I mean, the Saudis are radioactive, but that's why they're offering so much money. You know, they're saying, well, okay, yeah, you're going to lose your $3 million UPS deal, but we're going to pay you $20 million. So that just becomes built into the calculation, is that, yeah, you are going to lose endorsements. But on the other hand, I mean, if we're honest about it, so many international companies are already making money in Saudi Arabia. And so you may pick up, you know, some endorsements from some Middle Eastern companies that could help counterbalance that. But basically, that's why the Saudi money is so huge, just in the purses and the appearance fees and the guaranteed money they're paying the players. Because, yeah, they know they're going to lose endorsements. And that's why Phil, you know, had his endorsement partners walked away, because Saudi Arabia is so toxic. And so, yeah, that's an issue. But, you know, talking – I'm here at the PGA Championship in Tulsa, and talking to people in the game and agents and others who have been close to this whole situation, I mean, a number that keeps coming up is $230 million that supposedly that's what the Saudis have offered Phil. So that's real money. And that helps – at that point, you don't really care about – chasing deals from KPMG or whomever.
Yeah, you know? I don't want to be a Pollyanna, but when you have a wife and three kids, is there any consideration, because he's been the family guy? I'm not saying you're putting your family in harm's way in the middle of Times Square, but at what point do you not look around and go, what am I doing now for my family? They have my last name.
Yeah, well, people have asked me in the writing of this book, are you worried that the Saudis are going to come after you? I mean, you know, clearly, they're not too worried about public relations. They just executed like 81 people in the town square. Like they don't seem to really mind bad press. Like, they just do their thing. Like, if they're gonna kill a Washington Post reporter and dismember him, they're not overly concerned about how this is gonna play out.
No. But I'm asking though, your kids have to go to school, and you know, he absolutely has positioned himself like a family man to some degree as well, whether it's true or not. Is that not a consideration at this point for a guy like this?
If he walks away from the Saudis and they're pissed at him, is that what you're saying?
No, if he goes over there and he's kids and his wife and everybody has to live with the idea that...
He catches flack from the fact that he's a turncoat and his family does as well.
I guess. I mean, Phil's been, he's been mixed up in controversies his whole life, and he's talked his way out of all of them until now. So I would think that the Mickelson family is somewhat immune to having dad's name in the newspaper, but you're right. I mean, there's a little different level of toxicity when you're talking about Saudi Arabia. But on the other hand, I mean, the insidious thing about sports washing is that it works, because the Saudis have effectively bought their way into professional golf just by hosting this European Tour event and now this new LIV series. They host Formula One races. They host heavyweight boxing bouts. They're deeply enmeshed in European Premier League soccer. And over time, like, you can only express your moral outrage so many times, and then it gets tedious and people just tune you out. And that's why sports washing works. And then you say, okay, I guess the Saudis are now part of professional golf and just is what it is. And so they're playing the long game in this. Like, they can lose money forever. You know, they have unlimited resources. So, or at least until the oil dries up in 20 or 30 or 40 years, but they may not get the players they want in year one for the Saudi tour, but they're going to get some players, and these are going to be like, there's going to be a lot of B-list guys who go over there and make unimaginable money. And then other people in golf, other players are going to be like, hey, this sucks. I want some of that too. And so then they're going to go over there in year two, and then you'll get more players in year three. And so the Saudis have the resolve to just, these are little speed bumps along the way. And I think they know that ultimately the money corrupts, and they're going to get a lot of the players they want if they're patient.
How nervous is the PGA about losing whatever piece of the pie or the pie that they have? And they got to be really careful how they word going forward to make it not sound like it's just they're nervous about losing players and money.
Yeah, no, it's an existential threat to the PGA Tour for sure, because not only are the Saudis trying to cherry pick the top players, but they very cleverly have started inviting the top amateurs to these events. And there's talk that they're gonna fund a developmental tour for young players coming out of college. Those already exist in the U.S. You know, there's the Corn Ferry Tour. There's also the Canadian Tour. There's the Latino America Tour. These are like the minor leagues in baseball. But the money is tiny, and most guys go broke playing those because they have to pay their own expenses, and they have to travel every week, and the purses are so small. The Saudis, very cleverly, are talking about developmental circuit where there's really great money. So if I'm a kid coming out of college, do I want to starve to death playing the Canadian Tour, or do I want to go become a millionaire playing the Saudi developmental circuit and also, you know, honing my craft and getting better and learning how to play the professional game? It's a pretty easy choice. And so if the Saudis start taking a whole generation of great young talent, that's a huge problem for the tour. I mean, they have their stars right now, but you always have to be creating more stars. I mean, 2 years ago, no one had ever heard of Scottie Scheffler, and now he's number one in the world. Like, you know, there's a you can't just lose an entire generation of talent and think that's not going to really affect your business. So the tour knows this is a very serious threat, and that's why they've pushed back so hard, and they're fighting so hard to hang on to the players they have.
But as you said, the Saudis have billions they can afford to lose. So in that regard, they're the front runners, one would say. Philly rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar, Alan Shipnuck, the author of that book. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk down the road. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community, because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back. You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.